Welcome to the KBB From the Tap podcast. I'm managing editor Leslie Claggett, and this week I'm happy to talk with Laura Freeman. She's the founder of Merit's Design Group based in Atlanta. Laura has diverse credentials from ASID, WELL, and LEED that indicate the range of her interests as her designer. Welcome, Laura, and thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Leslie. It's really great to be here.
Your career path encompasses quite a creative spread, going from graphic design to interior design. Let's start by talking about your formal education. Where did you study, and why did you choose that path?
So I graduated from Colgate University, and it's a liberal arts school. We had an art department, but it wasn't robust at the time. I continued to take courses in art, but didn't declare a major in it because I didn't go there to be an artist. Upon graduation, that's where my career took me into PR, which I was exposed to more graphic design opportunities and illustrative opportunities. So really, that's when the Adobe Creative Suite was coming on, and I started taking continuing education courses and adding to my original education from a liberal arts school to really learn how to do more graphics in a software-based program.
So you were very self-motivated.
Yes. It got to a point where I was hired to do some work for some friends after I had left some of the PR and we were raising a family. And it's very challenging to take a hand-drawn element and modify it for a client 3, 4, 6, 10 times over. So it made sense and it was intriguing. I'm a lifelong learner, and it was very intriguing to go ahead and dive in and learn how to use some of these programs. And Adobe Illustrator was the first one that I learned because it is vector-based. It is drawing, even though you learn to draw with a mouse initially. This was before really stylos came into play and people didn't have drawing pads. And it was definitely an offspring into a whole new world of creativity for me. It was really exciting.
Do you ever miss drawing with a pencil?
I draw with a pencil all the time. I feel it's important. When I went to grad school to get my master's in interior architecture and design, our programs where we were learning how to do construction documents and fill out proper measurements and do detailed elevation drawings were all by hand first. And I was thrilled that we were doing that because I really believe the root of that has to come. It's a tangible industry, right? And tactile, and we want to be able to touch and feel everything. And I think it comes from feeling the sensitivity of an actual pen to paper or pencil to paper or marker to paper. And so a lot of my early renderings, I still have a lot of them, were done with pen and ink and hand markers. Right now, I employ people who design photorealistic renderings for me, but they're based on sketches that I take to the table before I even jump into a software program. So it's really a foundational tool, and it helped me all through grad school as well.
Let's go to, you mentioned working in PR for a little bit. What exactly did you do?
So my first job in PR was in largely media relations, but we also did some branding for companies. And because I had an English background, I was a good writer, and I started writing white papers and customized articles for our clients. Also, because I had an art background, I was bucketed into championing some of the clients that were already in the interior design industry, interestingly enough. So I wrote different articles and papers about recycled fibers in carpet tile. I learned and wrote about staging homes through going to a retail store. And also ergonomic design was becoming important in the mid-90s. And so I wrote a lot of papers about that. And then I took a little bit of a spin. We detoured and lived in New York City for 9 months. And I was a publicist with CBS Entertainment, which was very different. My writing was very quick. and prolific. We had to be very succinct, but I was basically trying to pitch television shows and movies that were made by the CBS network. And it was very exciting, but it was very stressful. And I
Be sure to
kind of got away
subscribe to
from the art
KBB's YouTube
path a little
channel
bit,
and click the
so
like
it
button
didn't
on the
last long.
videos. You can
Oh,
also
as
subscribe to
a former
KBB's From the
publicist
Tap
and
Copywriter.
podcast
Could
on
you
such
speak to the
apps
role
as
that
Apple,
verbal communication
Spotify,
plays in
Pandora,
design,
and
which Google
Google
primarily a
Podcasts?
visual
And please
business?
feel
Please
free to
feel
leave
free to leave a
a
review.
review. Sure. I think it's extremely important, first of all, to be a good verbal communicator. You have to be a fantastic listener. And I think it's really essential to sit down with a client, whether I'm doing the 30-minute discovery consultation or throughout the life of the project, to listen to what they're saying. Because sometimes it's even they're having trouble articulating what it is they want. And that's our role as a designer, is to extract, educate, and guide them in a world that I don't expect them to know all of the language and the semantics that we use. So I think the verbal communication is one where I can reduce stress. I can assure them that their project is in good hands, that we're on a comfortable timeline, and just really share the fun of what this can be, because it should be fun. If it's not, then I think the designers are doing something we need to tweak and take an introspective look at how this should be, because it should be stress-free. And I think it all starts with excellent verbal communication, which leads with being a good listener.
Yes, and also being a good questioner as well. I'm
Yes.
sure you've confronted people who just sit there and say, "Well, I know what I like."
Right. Questions are welcomed. I love questions. That means that they're engaged, right? So whether it's why did usually my verbal communication when I'm presenting the visuals is extremely important. I don't ever just send the visuals in an email. It's really important that we either do it in person or we have a virtual meeting where I walk them through. I want them to hear the tone and the passion in the concept narrative. I want them to understand that it is an interior design is an emotional response. And it's emotional for me, even though I'm not going to live in their space. And I want them to feel that way. So, yeah, I think that all ties in together for sure.
Right. Well, after your stint in PR and with CBS Entertainment, sounds very glamorous. What direction did your career take next?
So at that point, I was pregnant with our first son, and we moved back to Atlanta, and I had never lived in Atlanta before. And was kind of grappling with, okay, what am I gonna do? We made a decision to stay for me to stay at home and raise the boys. And thankfully, I had a lot of connections from my PR work with the interior design groups that I was hired to be a writer. So I could do that from home. And while I was writing a lot of articles and white papers for those clients that I had done when I was working at the PR agency, I got back to my roots of illustration and painting, which I started to do just as a relaxing thing in between learning to juggle a new baby. So from that, I just had a friend say, "Hey, would you like to do this for some money? I'm running a promotional company. I'd love to have a couple of artists on hand. I would hand paint some cards." And that's when I was really interested in getting into Adobe Illustrator and learning how to do this at a more scalable level so that I could really do this consistently and change things into and learn about print production, which was great. And so from there, it just sort of evolved into a lot of different things. I sold paint at art paintings at art festivals. And from there, someone asked me if I would paint home renderings for gifts for people. And so I did that for several years, where I would go to someone's house, photograph their home, and do a big, like a 16 by 20 watercolor rendering of somebody's home. And then that transferred into designing custom stationery for a national company, all just through, "Hey, did you see Laura? Have you met Laura's seen her work?" And so after doing that, I thought I would do it on my own. And the recession in 08 hit. So that became very challenging. And I had to deal with inventory that was pre-disposition for a client that couldn't, everybody pulled back in 08. So I pivoted a little bit and started doing more graphics and work for the corporate world. Again, marrying my branding and PR expertise with my newly found graphics skills. And that was lucrative and wonderful, but I wasn't 100% fulfilled yet. So that's where I started digging around and thinking, okay, to your question of to, what was the transition? So that led me going from graphics to interior design, and I entered grad school.
And I think you mentioned some seminal book that
Yes.
also influenced your thinking.
Right. So I don't think it was a midlife crisis, but when you're exploring your options, right? I love the phrase throwing spaghetti at the wall. And I threw a lot of noodles at the wall, just trying to figure out what stuck, what felt comfortable, what was exciting, and being a lifelong learner, where was I going to learn? And grad school came to the top of the list. And what to study was okay, I read lots of self-help books, self-discovery books, but there was one book in particular that I read by Sir Ken Robinson. I had watched TED Talks from him talking about the school system, and he's got some wonderful ideas. And he wrote a book, very short book called The Element. And he describes the element as the point at which personal passion meets natural aptitude. And I just thought that was so simple and beautiful. And it really resonated with me. And he had plenty of non-famous examples. And then the one example that really stood out was Julia Child. And she didn't publish her first cookbook until she was 50. And I thought, okay, I'm inspired. I'm intrigued. At that point, I was in my late 40s. And I thought, okay, well, I've got to head, I'm going to head this off. So I decided to dive into grad school, and it was amazing. What a wonderful experience to be fully committed that it wasn't right after undergrad. And I really wanted it. This was something that I really wanted to do. And I spent hours doing it. It was all online. It was from Academy of Art University in San Francisco. And we had people from all over the world in the classes, which was really extraordinary. And goes back, Leslie, to what you were saying about verbal communication, to be able to listen to other people's ideas of what they were bringing, whether they were in Saudi Arabia or China, and talking about what motivated them, what spatial priorities existed in their country, what aesthetics drove in their country, and all listen and have dialogues in a Zoom, in a virtual setting was really extraordinary.
Well, I think this is kind of an interesting segue to one of your next positions at Walt Disney World. What was your role there at the happiest place on earth?
Yeah, so during my p midpoint review at grad school, you have to declare what you would like to do with your graduate degree. And I proposed I would wanted to work in for Walt Disney and design in the parks, or I wanted to work in film, being a production designer. And I was fortunate enough to get hired by Walt Disney after grad school. And I worked as a set designer. I was hired as an art director and designed a lot of the sets where you have character greetings. So if your son or daughter or yourself, if you want to go have pictures taken with Moana, our department designed what that environment looked like. We would also do stage shows and other entertainment offerings in the park. But within a couple of really, like 3 weeks of starting, that was my proposed position because I had a graduate degree in interior architecture and design. Our VP in our department was also new. She joined just several weeks before I joined the department. And They brought me in to design her basic workspace outside of her private office where people could meet and wait to meet with her. It would be a common area in the building. And once I did that, then I was asked to do the lobby of our building, private office spaces, collaborative workspaces. And from that, everyone said, "Oh my gosh, you can do a lot of different things," and introduced me to the Global Resort Studio, where that group of designers would have either a rehab project or a new capital project. For example, designing a new hotel. They're designing one right now between the Grand Floridian and the Polynesian, which I worked on for 2 years. And our team would design custom carpet, art, wall coverings, textiles, architectural details. And so I was the liaison as having the language skills and the understanding of how things work in the built environment. I could also translate to my illustration team and art direct them so that they knew how repeats worked in interior design. And it was a fantastic position for me to be able to do that, having come from a 2D illustration world myself, and then evolve through three-dimensional spaces with interiors. It was a fantastic opportunity for me.
It's fascinating to me to hear that you designed both for a fantasy as well as reality. Really interesting. But you weren't just working at Disney at the time. You were beginning to launch your own design studio, correct?
This is correct.
How
Right.
did
So,
you balance those two experiences? They're both pretty intense.
right. I had a graphic design studio before I went to grad school. And then somewhere around, I think it was like my third year of grad school, someone I had done custom invitations for, we were talking at a local party or gathering, and their home had burned down. And I was consoling them, so sorry. And they said, "You know, I understand you're in grad school. We could really use some help. Would you be able to do that?" And I thought, "Oh my gosh, am I going to juggle that with school?" And so that's how I started working in interior design. And I transitioned the name of my business from a graphic design studio, which I named what which was named Ink and Paint, into Merit's Interiors, which is now Merit's Design Group. And upon graduation, that stuck. I kept that interior design business because I was still interviewing for Disney. I was interviewing at production companies, and I wasn't sure what was going to stick if I was going to be hired. So I did some small projects. And then when I was hired at Disney, it was a remarkable, flexible relationship. The first 6 months, I worked 100% of my time for Walt Disney. And then from after that, I had a flexible schedule where I could say, "I've got an opportunity to do an interior design project. I can give you 10 hours a week for the next 3 months, or I'm going to need to take a break right now." And then they would call me and say, "Hey, we've got this big project that we'd like you to work on. Do you have the capacity to do it?" And I would look at my schedule. So it was really symbiotic, and it had a great flow, and I could manage my schedule. But I wasn't doing Merit's Design Group full time. And then it just got to the point where we built a house, the one behind me now in Anna Maria, Florida. And it was too much to work in Orlando, in Atlanta, and now have a presence in Anna Maria. And by that point, I had been doing interior design with my own company off and on for 8 years, and I was getting more and more inquiries to assist companies and homeowners with design. And I felt like, okay, I think this is the time to let Disney go. It's been amazing, but it was just too hard to schedule. And so I took what I learned from that and have applied it to now what I've been doing for just over a year, doing Merit's Design Group full time.
Wow, you've got quite a trajectory here. I'm
Yeah.
so amazed.
It is very busy.
Given the technological trajectory that the design business is on, and recognizing that you are a self-described lifelong learner, I've got to ask the question that everybody's asking these days. How do you envision AI's role in design? And with possibly some exposure at Disney to the what is possible in that realm.
Sure. So I've attended some webinars on AI, and I've read some articles that came through Architectural Digested when I subscribed to their professional newsletter, and some other organizations will post about it. I have used AI to test some writing because I have a writing background. So I was curious, can this write better than I can? Is it as personal? And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It just depends on what type of voice and really what the piece is that I'm trying to write for. I have not used it in the interiors world, but I have sampled and played around with some platforms online just to get a better understanding of what are they offering exactly. And I am not an expert at all. I haven't done an AI interior test project from like a trial from, start to finish. But here's my understanding of it, where I think it will be useful for the homeowner who loves to dabble on their own and doesn't quite know how to use or select a software program that's a simple CAD program on how to lay out their room or what is their style. I find that's something that a lot of people, they know what they like, or they know what they don't like, but they don't necessarily have the words to articulate the style of what they like. And I think uploading images of their existing room is something where they can put in a couple of different styles. And so I think I like Mediterranean, and the AI will share that with them. I think that's great for the people who are looking for some simple guidance. They don't really have any investment expectations of building a home, but they're looking for a refresh. I think those are the types of clients that use eDesign right now, and which is a very successful business. I don't see it competing with designers like myself, where the personal aspect is so important. Like what we talked about in the beginning, Leslie, in terms of verbal communication, and for me to really sit down and extract the emotion behind what they are looking for, how they live. I believe that also from my Disney background, I'm a storyteller and I want to tell the family story or the business's story in their spaces. And AI is an automated program. And I think it is going to have limitations on extracting that type of emotion. And then there's also practical things. I don't think AI provides them with a shopping list, so it will give them a design, but at some point, the homeowner will have to go and take what they're doing and execute it. I do see it being very helpful for realtors where they're faced with an empty home or building space, and they can take a picture of it and upload it online and say, we need 10 desks, or show me a conference room. I think that's fantastic. It will help their clients visualize. I think if I was a realtor, I would sign up and do that and be able to show how things can be refreshed or changed. But for me, I just think it lacks the personal edge. Especially in my business of it's not unusual for me to work 18 months with a client, and I just don't think you get that attention. I would be surprised if AI could deliver that level of luxury service at a concierge level that's very personal. So, but yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that optimistic yet cautionary outlook.
Sure.
This has been a great conversation, and I'd like to thank you very much, Laura Freeman, for joining us today on KBB's From the Tap.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Be sure to subscribe to KBB's YouTube channel and click the like button on our videos. You can also subscribe to KBB's From the Tap podcast on such apps as Apple, Spotify, Pandora, and Google Podcasts, and please feel free to leave a review.